y'all.
Michael always coming in late. Always.
Hey, she ain't never late. She's always on time. Don't play.
Michael, you're consistently late. Like, literally, you can ask.
I'm never late. I'm always on time.
Literally, if you ask any of your bosses, they will always say, Michael is late.
It's never late. He's always on time for when we need him.
Oh, and to Michael's bosses. Mm-hmm. This is to y'all. He be lying.
Ooh. I don't. Stop. I lied. Hey, I will say this. I lied 4 years ago.
Stop. 4 years ago, what was the lies?
I'm not going to say it. Why would I tell my lies? Anthony, what's your tell when you betting money in poker?
I don't play poker.
You gamble, don't you? Mm.
I don't gamble, actually.
Y'all just putting all y'all business.
What do you do, Anthony? What kind of deals have you been getting through Carnival? Casino deals, which are gambling.
Those are called playing slots.
Slots. That's gambling.
But there's no telltale. It's not like I'm betting against and there's a telltale sign.
Did you or did you not sit at a table the last cruise?
Playing blackjack, bitch.
That is still poker. No, it's a form of poker.
Is it?
It's a form of cards. You still gambling.
Okay. Well, look. All I'm saying is that I don't like, if I'm late, I'm late. Which I'm never late.
That's what I do. Oh, you're never late?
Yes, I'm never late.
What day was it that you were late to your Thursday?
What day was I late to my Thursday? I think you just said the...
Was it the second Houston Pride Band after the second Houston Pride Band or the first one? Was that Thursday, you were getting that good sleep.
Oh, you're talking about to my school. Technically, yes. I was late.
Oh.
See, look, y'all, if y'all set y'all alarm clocks early to get your body before the time that you're needed, therefore, if you have a slip-up moment, yeah, you're late to you, but you're not late for the job to where they can say, you are no longer needed. We no longer require your services. Oops.
Well, exciting times. Exciting times. It's back to school. Woo woo. I think honestly, wait.
What you mean we're back to school? Girl, well, we've been in school for like you gotta 7 weeks.
West Coast.
We've been
shut up. West Coast.
Week like seven.
Going back to school. West Coast is going back to school now. So we get officially back to school.
This is almost the third month of school.
I'm so happy for
y'all. I'm saying like, girl, we about to be in October.
I'm so happy for y'all. I think we're just starting schools back. Especially collegiate. I think last week we started back like K-12 and everything. So anyway, back to school.
Y'all don't go to school till this week.
Please.
I'm sorry. I'm really concerned about y'all's education over there.
We go until June. You know this. We've talked about this many times. Please.
That is true. You do go to school later in June.
Yes.
And go back in September. However, I don't know how you acclimated to that. I think I would just be like, no.
Up to what part? The starting late or the keeping going?
I think both. The starting late.
All the way to keep going for me.
In September, like, and going into June, like late June or mid-June, whenever it is.
It's the June part for me.
I think that when I first moved here, I immediately started working. So I was already working and stuff. So like when I added, I was happy to have as much time to get used to working first before I jumped back into school. So that part was cute. It does make you feel a little anxious when you have friends on the like East Coast or anywhere else who's like, everyone's going back to school. It's like, I have another month and a half until I have to even think about that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you do go until like mid-ish June. So that part, but you got to remember the summer for Seattle doesn't start really until then. And like it's just now ending as well, which is when people are going back to school. So like they just shifted that to make it make sense for people who live here.
Yeah.
But speaking of that, this is the first time ever that the fall is rolling around and I'm not going to be enrolled, but I'm still, I have friends and students who are in schools right now, and a big conversation topic is financial aid. Because I've had many friends who've gone to try to get their DMAs, which are Doctorate of Musical Arts, or any other graduate degrees, or they get it accepted into the program, but they don't have any financial aid offerings. And that's not even just for them specifically. It's like that studio has no money for the year. And to be fair, we all have experienced this where this is a very normal thing, right, throughout applications. But what's happening right now is due to budget cuts at the federal level, there are many students who are trying to go to school right now who actually aren't getting any financial aid. What do
Well,
we think this is going to do? What is the impact that we think this is going to have within the future for music education specifically?
I can tell you this, a music program, they do not spare any expenses for music, especially I'm thinking about the undergraduate curriculum. I mean, I think I was talking to Michael a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about how many hours, a music major would have, which I think for our undergrad, I think mine was 131. I think I think 131, and that's 131 credit hours. Do the math, it'll come up with tuition and things like that. And I think normal people, I call them the gen pop peoples, had like 90. So for music majors, we already had to come out of pocket for that, and luckily it was under our career, so a lot of us use financial aid for that. But hearing that financial aid is being cut back even more, I'm thinking about people like my family. I was a first generation, college student who I will say my counselors, the people that I went to high school with, that were teachers and stuff, they did not prepare me very well. As a first generation, college goer, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. So I ended up getting private loans, and then Lord knows all this stuff. So like, if I would have known about financial aid and how to actually accrue that a little bit more, I think I would have used that and been in some of this loan forgiveness that everybody else is going through. And I think that it's a cause and effect, in the past, I guess year, one of the biggest things on the radar for anybody that's gone to college is the loan forgiveness, and especially after COVID, because things were defaulted, and then it got an extension and stuff like that. So I think because there were so many people that had financial aid and used financial aid, and they ran into the problem that they did, I think they're now looking at it like, well, we don't want this problem again, so how about we just not give much out anymore? And to me, it's like, well, what do we value in this country? Is it education? Because I don't really think so. And I think we talked about this some maybe last episode or a couple episodes ago. It's showing more and more in this country that we don't want people to be educated, because the people who end up being educated, even as music majors, we end up becoming more enlightened to different ideas, to different, if I'm from a country part of Georgia, like many people were, and then I go off to the big city and I'm in a college, and now I'm, in a class or in a group with somebody who for my entire life I was supposed to hate, because my family told them I was supposed to hate them, but I realized that person ain't as bad as my grandma, my granddad, my mom and dad said they were. So now they have this different thought on life. So what I'm seeing as this like attack on education, an attack on higher ed, as more of we don't want people to be educated. We don't want people to break out of, let's say, more conservative views. And how can you attack education without actually going to attack education? Go for the money, because that's what is needed.
That's true.
Money.
That's true. Yeah, there's always this like idea that going to college or going to school makes you like immediately liberal, or like that all the professors you'll meet in like collegiate environments are all liberal or more progressive. And I think that there may be a what is the word, like a
Correlation.
correlation, yes, a correlation between those two factors, but not necessarily because the information they are teaching in the schools, in the classrooms, are necessarily progressive leftist ideals. But whenever you are presented with the facts of what has happened, then that is where things like specifically a certain political side has deemed certain facts as being they're not facts. You're right. And there's a whole like, what is this, a truth war going on now? Like, what is actually true? It feels like every single day there's a new headline or a new thing that comes out that it feels as if science or people who are the actual experts or researchers have not been consulted on whatsoever. And education is seen as a threat because it allows for people, anyone to be able to search up whatever they want on the internet. The issue is that people have selected viewing, selective listening, selective learning. Therefore, they only try to search out for what makes sense for them. And I mean this for everyone, like any side. This could be true for any side. What your education actually supposed to be is learning what is true, what is factual, what has happened, what is currently happening, what are we moving towards, what, and we study history, therefore, so we cannot, so we don't repeat the past whenever it comes to like, really bad things that have happened in the past. And you can't, like, history, it's, I mean, I don't know. I'm a fantasy girly. So a lot of a big trope in fantasy books is that, especially if there's hierarchies, a government, royalty, whatever, at some point, maybe some of the main characters finds out that the history that they have been told all their life is not actually true. And it's so easy within those stories to see how even within one generation, the truth can be easily wiped out if you limit what people can read, what they can watch, what they have access to. So we are seeing play out in real time now the effects of what happens whenever like actual history is not taught in the schools, because we know that like even the African American Museum, the National African American Museum, was supposed to take down anything that was negative like towards America's image. But that to some people was considered like everything that happened with the Atlantic slave trade. So that means a huge part of what America's history is would be left out in order to make it more favorable, more palatable, but that is not the truth of what America is. And so, anytime these, especially when education is brought up, it's a very it's a poke because they want it to seem as if, everything that is being taught in classrooms is making people more liberal. And the truth is, the more information you have, the more perspective you are able to have, the then you don't you're not so like closed minded. You're not so like this, well, this is what I know, so therefore that is it. You're able to have more conversations.
It
Yeah, and
strikes
I'm
me.
scared,
Look, correct me
actually.
if I'm wrong. You know, I think the most learning I, as a person that I ever did, was definitely not in a classroom. It was definitely the people that I came into contact with. Those were the changing of the guard, where I was like, oh, hey, you meet somebody, you're like, wait a minute. This is a key. We're having a good time. We're having a good time. And even for the people that were more on the conservative side, you start to see that there is still some way for you to find some type of middle ground somewhere. And I think that although the biggest thing that so many people say is that, oh, we need to come together, oh, we need to come together, but I really don't think people want that. I think people like the divisiveness, like the we need to be divided. Because like in college, I'm thinking about the groups of people you would see together. You're like, what is going on here? Or even in high school, in public ed in general. I remember when I was in high school, I'm over here talking with some country folks that just came back from deer hunting, mud bogging, and everything. I'm like, hey, what's going on? So that's what I think people don't like. And I think the back to what I was saying of like, how can we cut all this out? Money. Money. Why do you think so many people are trying to defund public ed? They're trying to go to these charter schools so that they can, have one way of teaching, and also not one way of teaching, but one type of person can go to these schools. Why do you think they're trying to defund libraries and things like that, where sense of knowledge can start to change people and connect like-minded people together? The legal way of doing that is by money, even though I don't really think it's legal, but they have found a way to segregate based on now what tax bracket you can afford to be in. And that's why I think the financial aid part comes back of, well, if we start to limit out, the aid that we're giving from the federal government, the only people that can afford to go to college will be the ones that already have come off from a well-off, family. And I didn't know that wealth equals education and deserve an education.
I mean, college is expensive.
It is.
College is so expensive. It's getting more expensive every year. And without federal aid, it, like, so, like, we almost ran into this problem at UNG. And I don't know where it came down from, either like our upper admins or University Systems of Georgia. But we almost didn't get any federal work study throughout the entire university. And we're like, oh. Public programs that run fully off of that, like if we don't have any of those people, this is not getting done. And I was like, y'all better figure something out, because I could tell you this, I ain't gonna do it.
I'm not surprised at all that they went immediately for accessibility, like as soon as they possibly could, because all of what were these programs that are able to help people who are disadvantaged, that's accessibility. It is allowing for everybody to feel like they're able to start from the same place, or at least end up at the same place. If they're not starting from the same place, then hopefully, they end up, in the same places, or have the ability to end up in places that they would like to. And financial aid, taking that away for a significant amount of like universities and colleges across the country, cuts accessibility. So, because there are some people who would never, I was able to go through my graduate education because I had financial aid. There would have been no possible way for me to have gone through my education without financial aid. It would not have been possible for me to be there. But that is not the case for everybody, right? But if we were to say that only people who could afford it can go, that's how it used to be, right? And that's why there were only certain people who became doctors and lawyers and were in symphonies, because they were the only ones who had the skills to be able to go do those jobs later on. It's not because it was based off of merit. It never was. That was only because of the lack of accessibility, right? And now all these initiatives that have, especially between the times of like 2020 to now, kind of, 2020 to like maybe last year, that have been started and happening, were in order to help people who were disadvantaged. That is the entire point. If DEI is a tool, a resource for people who need it, it is not something that takes anything away from anyone. It's so annoying. And at this point, I mean, there are people who, I'm sure you guys have experienced this too, where you talk to somebody and they're maybe you're not on the same, like you don't lean either side, politically, or you don't lean on the same side politically, but you're able to have conversations like this, and they're like, they're understanding and blah, 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 because you are able to have some really great conversations with people who you don't agree with politically on everything. And then I'm sure you've also had conversations with people who don't want to listen to you at all. They as soon as they figure out what your politics are, they immediately go into like trying to either, catch you in a lie, or try to prove you wrong with whatever they're bringing up, or whatever examples they have. Like, what about this? What about this? And they're not actually wanting to engage in a conversation with you. I personally, I'm not talking to you. I'm not talking to you. If you're not actually here to have a good conversation and like talk like two humans, then there is no reason for me to be engaging with you. I don't. The people who do that, who want to engage with those kinds of people, bless you. Like, have fun doing that if that is what you feel like your purpose is. I'm not wasting my energy on someone who doesn't want to listen to me. It's a two-way street of communication. So let's talk about it. We're like the two of you are educators. And this is something that you could really see affecting your students long term. I mean, seeing your students go from high school, middle school to high school, and then wanting to go to college and then getting stopped, possibly because there's no financial aid. For you, Michael, having students who would have come into your programs who might not be able to because they don't have financial aid, like, this is an issue, right? Like, these are students who could have came in and who could we want to be able to come into these programs and enrich them in a very different way. The new youth have amazing ideas. They grew up with maybe like more open, they're more open-minded than past generations, and there's a possibility that we could be losing them.
I mean, look at Michael. He came from country Jones County.
I know you ain't talking. We were 30 minutes apart.
But I come from a city, and you came from the backwoods.
Barely a city.
A city is a city.
Barely.
A city is a city. Just
Barely.
saying. Look, Michael came from the backwoods on them dirt roads. And now look at him. Look at him. Oh, well, I guess he feels a certain
It's
way.
already started. Already the slander. Anyways, I just want to put some facts out there. The rough estimation of a 4-year college. And I don't know if this is like everything, but it's about 120 grand. That's a public university. If you go private, it's about a quarter of a mil.
Yeah, I'm sure that's just for tuition.
I'm pretty sure that's almost just for tuition.
Yes.
But I'm just, y'all, crazy out here. But yes, I mean, like, if you, the sticker price alone, even with Hope and Zelle, still scare people.
Yes.
And that's like a big thing in Georgia. I don't know what other states have. I know like in Kalamazoo, Michigan, if you went through Kalamazoo like public schools for a certain amount of years, you got the Kalamazoo Promise, which like was a very big help for some of them. But like it's crazy out here in these streets.
It is.
Mean, Anthony is right. If it wasn't for like financial aid and other things, y'all still be in middle Georgia now.
And I think here in Texas they have that thing. I'm not in high school, so I don't know what I'm not as versed as I was like when I was teaching in Florida. In Florida, there was a whole, process of doing things. You had to take this many classes and take this. I mean, for when I was living in Georgia, you just had to have a 3.7 GPA.
Right.
And you got Zell Miller that took care of your tuition and things like that. And even if you had a 3.2 and above, 80% of your tuition was covered.
Right.
Now, that's great and stuff, but I will say the biggest thing that people really need to talk about is housing.
Oh my God.
That was the thing. Like tuition, okay, that for Kennesaw where we went, that what maybe 4,000 to like $6,000, I think, per
I think
semester.
it was like 12
Was it?
for what?
For tuition.
For a year or for a semester?
12 to 14 for the year, I think.
Yeah, because it was 6,000, 6,000. I think it was 8,000. I think it was like 8,000 to 9,000. Because I remember like 3,000 one semester, 3,000 the semester. But the thing
But
that
maybe that might have been you had Zelle. It ain't no $3,000.
Is it not? Look,
No,
I
I
don't.
mean, see, that's your privilege talking right
I
there.
mean, if you say
It
you had Zell, then that could be
is.
different.
Look, that is my privilege talking because look, what I saw was the tuition was covered. But when I saw that price for them, the student apartments.
Right, because we paid $690 year one.
Is that all we pay?
If you were on, where were you at?
The University Village.
Oh, so y'all were off campus.
No. My first year at
No,
Duke.
he was in our
Yes,
same
we were in
building,
the
girl.
same
Yeah, I
building,
was
girl.
like, okay, so I paid $690. What did y'all pay?
I can't even
You
remember. I just remember that big old
paid.
price.
So the average amount of housing
Whoo!
is $8,000 a year
Yes, that is correct.
now.
Yeah.
8,700.
That's 9,000. Let's just chop it up. That's
That's
nine.
for a year.
Tuition's roughly like 6,000.
That's what I was thinking. That's why I was like, it's.
Okay, so the total cost, and this is okay, this is like, let's say we're using KSU because that's where we're from. Books, course material supplies, fees, loan fees, personal expenses,
Wait,
food,
wait, wait, wait,
housing,
wait.
transportation, tuition, all totals to roughly 30 grand.
But here's where they get you. High school students, college students, whatever, them fees. Tell me, why am I being caught up on something that I never use? Okay, no, why is there a technology fee? I never been to no technology center. I don't even use your stuff. Why
That's the thing.
is there a
You use
rent?
the Wi-Fi.
First of all, this big school that got 40,000 children, you can't pay the Wi-Fi bill.
They
You
can't.
can't pay the
They
Wi-Fi bill.
can't. Oh,
They can't.
it's just like the same thing. It's just like, Anthony, we paid your salary at the gym, girl. I never been in that
That's
gym.
true.
You
There
bet
you
you did.
go.
Look,
I paid my own salary. Hell, that you
you
give me
did. Yeah.
everything.
No, but like it's expensive. It's so like $120,000 a year, and asking someone to, or sorry, $120,000 for a 4-year education.
Oh, y'all talking about that.
It's like, who's paying
That
that?
would be
Who's paying
crazy.
that? Be like, damn, I hope I go
I mean,
straight to
okay.
the damn presidency after that.
Y'all do gotta remember though, we're in Georgia, we're in the South. We have, in general, the rates, the cost of living is significantly
Let me
lower
do
in those
the
areas.
UW. By the
And
way, why is
yeah.
tuition 2,000 a year, y'all? I never got on them buses. Broke.
Oh
Wait,
yeah.
what?
Oh wait, no, I definitely used the Bob. I
I did.
used
Bob, not the Bob.
the Bob.
That
I
big old Bob.
Bob, girl.
Because I used it my second year when I was a sophomore. That's the only time I ever got on that bus, and I was really hoping it would have broke down because I would have sued. That I would have had a building named after me. Sure would have. And I was hoping it would hit me when I would cross the street. That's all I'm saying.
Crazy,
Okay.
crazy. No, but like, I don't know, y'all. I mean, it's sad to see. I feel like we kind of got out of it before things got too crazy with, the questioning of financial, because like people are getting their scholarships taken away during the year,
Yep.
right? Like it's like they thought they had it guaranteed and then it's not. And it's very similar to what's happening with arts organizations. They're getting things taken away from them, things that were supposed to be like, oh, it should be in your hand now. We talked about this before already. Like that's also being cut. These programs that have done so much benefit through the over the last 5+ years are being taken away. Let's talk about orchestras. What's going on there? And it's interesting because, like, very often it's like, why do we talk about orchestras? So you have to remember, within the classical music field, orchestras are like the pinnacle of like what the traditional like orchestra what orchestral history really is. It is the it's or the orchestra, classical music. There's like early like piano concertos, violin concertos, sonatas, all that stuff, and that's why there you also see them very tradi like prominently featured on stage. But it is a classical music pantheon. It is just present, it is heavy, it is there. There's so much tradition and value and history connected to it. And there are people who are always going to think it's significant, right? So when we were talking about the classical music field, we talk about orchestras because so many people who are going to these conservatories, who are wanting to study in schools, are being trained to be in this institution at some point, right? So it's like it's a factory. It's a process line of like you go to school, you go do your time in your education, and then you hope to win a job someday if that is a track you're on. But even if you're a music educator, students who come out of your programs are going to possibly also end up composers of different ensembles, or they're going to also end up music educators like you, or they're going to end up in an orchestra. You could have a drum major who really wants to be a conductor one day, and they go that route. And so there's a lot of lines that lead to the symphony orchestra. So we need to talk about it, and we need to talk about what's going on stage, and to see like, are we progressing? Now, youth orchestras, I'm gonna say this: youth orchestras know what's going on. If you go to your local like youth orchestra and see what kind of initiatives and programs they have their students doing, and also take a look at who they have on stage and what music they're playing, the repertoire the diversity on stage for symphony orchestra, youth symphony orchestras, is miles and light years ahead of what's happening in professional orchestras. This is something I've said many times at the League American Orchestras Conference. I've done studies on why that is, and like, see, it's just because these younger generations are, first of all, have way more access to programs that maybe people before them did not. Say, I've said that myself, like there are people who came before me who did not have the access to programs that I have. That's going to hopefully continue as we progress. But we can still look, as you guys were just talking about for Houston, on these stages 5 years after all these commitments and things, you know, we our promises, and this is what our DEI initiative is, and this, you know, Black Lives Matter, all this stuff. And you still go to many tier one symphony orchestras and see one person of color on that stage, the Lone Ranger.
Not the Lone
Lone
Ranger,
Ranger.
holding
And
it down.
holding it down. And we're happy to see him when we see him. Let's never, you know, whenever it's like, clap it up. We're happy you're there. Why are you alone? Why are you the only one on
I have
stage?
to say a quote after y'all done.
Are you saying it now?
No, I gotta find it because it's a spicy quote.
Right. So I'm gonna speaking locally here in Seattle. So Seattle Symphony, my orchestra that I'm here with, is we currently have the third ever female conductor for a major U.S. orchestra. Third.
That's crazy that that's the third ever. What year is it?
Third ever. It's 2025, and we have the third and the history of orchestras, girl. Like, over 100 years of history of this ensemble, and this is the third time we've ever had an American, a female conductor of a major American orchestra. That's crazy. I mean, there's a lot there. Like, we're doing a lot of like splash, Shin's here, blah, all this fun stuff that we're trying to celebrate her for. And you also have to think about, why are you the third? It should be more of a, we're just celebrating the fact that this person is here, but we also have to call out the fact that this is the only, and ASO is the second, we know that, hometown, Natalie
Natalie Schussman.
Schutzman, and we also, and Maren Alsop was the first pioneer for that, and here we are. And I can't remember whenever she got that appointment, but many, probably decades later now, and here we are. So it's 2025. You can maybe say that because I think when Natalie was appointed, what, three, when, 3 years ago, 4 years? I can't remember when that
She was appointed. Wasn't she appointed when we were in undergrad?
was. No, that sounds
Well,
too
she might have been appointed, but didn't take over until what, 2 years
years
ago?
ago.
2005 for Marian also.
So 20 years later, and we went from one to three. Now, if you want to talk about, I guess, rate of change, I guess the fact that we have Natalie and Ashin both within the last like 5 years, I guess you can say that it's increasing. So great, let's keep it that way. But the issue, going back to what we were just talking about, is the fact that if these programs that are specifically meant to help make sure that the new generation of leaders, there is possibly that women, people of color, are able to be in these spaces, and financial aid is like hindering that, then this is going to slow down, or we're going to see this kind of rate disappear over time quicker than it started. Very quickly.
I love the thing that you said about youth orchestras and youth ensembles because there are more women conductors in those fields. There are a lot more people of color, specifically Black, Brown people that are conductors of that. But it also begs the question, why would you say they're good for this, but they're not good for, the face of an American orchestra or a top tier wind band, and so it's like a twofold situation here, but I am always happy to see some change to break it up. I know just this past weekend I went and saw the Houston Symphony Orchestra and they were fabulous.
Oh,
Fabulous.
good.
But My eyes scanned the entire stage for one black person. And I found her. She was a flautist. One out of the entire orchestra, and almost the entire choir, because the Houston Symphony Chorus was also there. And then the soprano was Angel Blue, who is an African American vocalist, soprano, Grammy Award winning. So that was it. So for me, my eyes are all, that's the first thing I look for.
Yeah.
And
And
it's
there's
Houston, just like in Atlanta. Well, you know, we have said this year after year after year. The question always begs up, but why are people not in our audience? Well, you're not going to the communities. You're not actually breaking through the people who would come. So if I'm in Atlanta or I'm in Houston, which are predominantly, you know, minority populations in both of those cities, why would you not do something in the minority population and have some more representation? Now, I will say Atlanta did have, at one point in time, I don't know about now, but at one point in time, did have way more black people than many US orchestras. I don't know about now. I think some of them have left. But Houston, I'm like, look, same thing. Also, where are my more Hispanic players? There's a whole thing when we talk about orchestras. Are they supposed to be outwardly influential? Or is it supposed to be because orchestras have been this long-term, you know, big thing in culture that people are just supposed to come?
Yeah, that's not happening. Like the statistics are showing that that is not happening. What's happening is due to some orchestras who are doing really great engagement and going out into the communities, they are getting new audiences who are coming in. Some of the audiences came back after COVID. There's still some of the traditional like donors, subscription people, but I and Matthew, you can speak to this too from being in Chattanooga, but at least for what we're seeing is that as we have tried to shift our programming and our initiatives to be more representative of what's currently going on, to be more relevant, we're getting newer and newer people who are coming in to see shows that we who have never come in before, and that is what that is the success that we are seeing. But what about Chattanooga?
We're doing a lot of, I mean, I don't know the background of, you know, I play my little buttons there.
And this
But I
is the
mean,
difference between musicians and administrators.
we're doing, hey, I'm just saying that ain't my job. My job is to play. But no, I mean, we're doing a lot. I know I was a part of an event trying to bring in and cultivate young donors and like young people into it. So it's like a bunch of us and like we're all around the same age. It's like mid-20s to early 30s. And we're trying to bring in like that crowd. And I think we've changed some programming. I know one of our initiatives that has remained for my 3 years is we always feature one composer that is from an unrepresented background on every single concert of our classical subscriptions.
Now, Michael, being an orchestra player, because you just made a joke, but I'm going to call you out on it because I know it's not actually true. You don't just see your job as just playing the trumpet.
Oh no, not with me and my orchestra. Well, that not me. Like, because I view like, you know, classical music is always under attack. So like if we don't do our job, like yes, we can go out and play high level music. And yes, that can hit somebody in one eyes. But if they don't see that we're like a part of the community and a part of what they are too, they're not gonna want to come in. Like it's just as simple as that. Like we're playing this weekend. I'm so excited. We're playing at ChattanoogaCon. We're doing two shows, the brass quintet is. And so like I'd have a 9 o'clock show and a 1 o'clock show. And I'd be like, yeah. Oh.
Are you gonna
What
dress up?
are you saying?
You're gonna dress up?
No.
Well, that's not
But this
fun.
is, I love
Well,
this. It sounds like these initiatives like that, and it sounds like there has to be communication from between the orchestra and the administration. I know that to be true because nothing works when you're not talking. So a lot of the time when we're seeing like unsuccessful statistics or things happening like in orchestras is because the orchestra and the staff, like the administration, are not actually connecting, communicating, and being honest about what's going on. Or there is diverse or like varying like value sets. So one group is like, we want to focus on this while the other is, and it doesn't make sense. You have to meet somewhere in the middle because the orchestra, that is what people are seeing on stage, right? That is the money they're paying for. The orchestra, the reason why they're able to do that is because the administration is doing helping them with the devo and the marketing and the putting the music in front of them and all this. So it's a balance that has to happen. So you, the musicians like Michael, have to be aware of what's going on in the field. You cannot just be like, I'm just gonna play my music. There, and here's the thing. There are musicians who do that. And the ones who do that, you're not my favorite. Like, I know that you're just there, you just want to play your instrument, but your field is drowning right now. And you're taking no responsibility at all besides thinking that you're just gonna practice your scales and think that's gonna fix everything. No one gives a bleep about that unless you people care about you and they want to feel like you care about them as well. You can't just think that just because you're practicing your whatever, I don't know, trumpet, like etudes, that people are going to show up just for that. You're not Beyonce. You're not Beyonce. People will go see Beyonce no matter what. Unfortunately, you got to put in a little bit more effort. And even Beyonce's team tries to do with say especially Sacred, everything that's going on with her hair care line right now, like there's a lot of like wanting to listen to the community, being aware of what's actually needed, that happens in order for people to continue buying into it. But you cannot just show up and have no awareness of what's actually going on in the community and expect people to keep doing the same for you.
You know what
Like
I'm seeing in a lot of these places and things of it's really their teams, but a lot of these organizations are on like TikTok and social media, like beyond, like you were talking about Sacred. Like I saw a video of a random creator using Sacred and da da da. But the first comment I see is like the Sacred brand, like the tag. I love seeing that. Or, you know, Carnival Cruise Line, they had a lot of bad stuff going on. But Carnival be under some posts and stuff, you know, and like that's let's bring that in to this, you know, professional music world. But I need to say this because I've been here in Houston for 2 years now, and I've gone to a couple Houston Symphony Orchestra concerts, and last night was fat or Friday night was wonderful. On the program was a piece by Florence Schmidt called Psalm 47, and then they did The Firebird, Stravinsky.
Love.
Beautiful. The concert from beginning to end was fabulous. It was also the opening gala. So, I mean, you had all these basically millionaire and million and billionaire companies that were, you know, sending people there. Great. However, that was not the most well-attended concert. Now, I'm going to tell you which was the most well-attended concerts. There's two of them that, in my time being here, I have seen. The first one is when I first moved here to Houston, and it was Latin night.
Oh, yes.
And every piece on the program was written by a composer of Latin descent, basically. So you're talking about Mexican, you're talking about any South American, you're talking about Caribbean. I mean, and everything was in Spanish. So I'm sitting here who's like, I can pick up a couple phrases and things, but like that's I kind of really enjoyed that because think about how many times we as English speakers are just speaking and don't know what's really going on for other people that don't speak English. But when I tell you that music and to see the kind of self-loving of the people, and they started, you know, at one time they started speaking of all the countries that's in like Latin America, and then you hear, you know, people screaming. When I tell you there was not a seat on field at that concert, zero. The other concert that was not. There was no seat available. Was when Solange did Elder Room. And when I tell you, every Black person was in that seat for a Houston Symphony Orchestra concert. Those are two concerts where, who is Stravinsky? who is Florence Schmidt. Beautiful works, but they thought about community. Oh, by the way, the Latin concert was completely free for everybody. Tickets.
Oh, police. I love that. I love that.
That's when the orchestra, to me, deserves my money. Like, I'm just going to say, look, I don't get the student tickets anymore. You remember when we was in undergrad, the little $20 tickets? No, Houston Symphony Orchestra tickets, they're a little expensive. However, I am fine with paying that because I see the work that they are doing for other people in Houston community. I will always support an organization like that.
Yeah. Yes.
What I won't do is support an organization that just thinks that everybody should come to them because they're playing Stravinsky, they're playing Bach, Beethoven. No. And do nothing for this community or any community at that. I'm okay. You can find your money somewhere else. I hope it's good.
I think our whole thing this next couple of years under our new music director, it's like everything local. So we had art made for every concert. By a local artist. There's being for sale, like by merch. We're bringing in a local like pop culture singer. I don't know what genre she sings, but like she just shows all the time. We're gonna bring her in. We're playing at a baseball game.
Love.
I'm on that next weekend. So this weekend I'm at Chattanooga Con. The following weekend we're playing at a game. I don't know what their baseball team's called. It's like a minor league or something. So that's 2 weekends in a row we're doing something in the community. And I'm like, this is gonna be cool. I cannot wait. I will say this. Okay, I got a spicy quote. And also, I have a rant after this. But not like a big rant. A little rant. Like a little baby rant. Okay. So this was said by a prominent musician in a, I would say, top five orchestra. Getting paid a bunch of money, tenured, says, I'm going to say something very inflammatory here. The vast majority of female trumpet players are just not good enough to play in major symphony orchestras.
Oh, I remember this.
Likewise, the overwhelming majority of minority trumpet players are mediocre and just will not cut it in the professional world. It also goes without saying that the overwhelming majority of white male trumpet players by professional orchestra standards, quote, suck. There are just happens to be more of them. Finding people that can play at the caliber required in a major orchestra is like mining for precious metals. You need tons of rock to find ounces of lithium. The more rock you have, the better your chances of finding what you're looking for. As long as that rhetoric stays alive, that's the problem. That's one of the problems. Like, that is a huge problem. Like, imagine the people who are aspiring, who are practicing, who are wanting to do something, read that. And they're just like, why am I doing this? And they just stop. And honestly, if you look up to these people and you read that, like, why don't you stop? Mm-hmm. They literally said, you're not good enough. And it's crazy. Now, my other quote, real quick, just putting this out there. I like orchestra. I love band. I like orchestra. I wish there were more American conductors in America. I'm sorry. Like, the thing is, like, the reason why is not because, like, oh, America, blah, blah, blah. No, it's because it is a Eurocentric art form and thing. And I believe in America, if we bring in more people with, like, that grew up in America and went through the culture and see the things that are going wrong and see the kind of difference in the background, the programming will change and it will bring in more of the things that will make it more sustainable in the future. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying, like, to everybody who's not my American people, love you. Like, every art you make is beautiful as well. And I love that you are serving art and you're being amazing in this country. I think there's a part of keeping hiring Eurocentric conductors in this Eurocentric space that is keeping the diversity of America out of these Eurocentric spaces. Mm-hmm. Like, I've thought about this for a while. Like, the fact that out of the three conductors, Marion Alsop was born in America, an American conductor. Natalie is a French conductor. And then what's your conductor's name?
Shin. Yeah.
Is a Chinese American conductor. Mm. And so, like, out of the three, which is amazing that we have three women and two within the past 3 years get their appointments. One is, like, born in America.
Right.
And again, I love all the art that everybody makes. I love all this. But I want more, like, who's the conductor of Baltimore now?
Oh, no, you're not.
Oh, who am I thinking of? Ooh. Like, the fact that Bernstein was the first, and that was so revolutionary. I want more, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy that he was the first. So, I told that to my class, and they were like, my music appreciation class, they're like, what do you mean he was the first? I said, girl, exactly what I just said. But I don't know. I just feel like there's a part of that we are not missing, but we're keeping it Eurocentric.
Yes.
And so I just want to break against that in every realm possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to go back to your first quote, and then I'll come back to this one. That post that the person made, I'm sure they thought they were trying to just be like, they probably thought they were making a very moderate, you know, post. Like, some people on either side aren't going to be like completely happy or upset, etc. But with a post like that, they completely ignore the fact that women and people of color who have attempted and are trying to attempt to win these orchestral positions, even, like, first of all, they don't nearly have the same, like, ability for education, usually because of financial status and all these other things that occur within the university settings that may harm and, like, not be nearly as easy to navigate for people of color and women versus, like, white men, especially straight, like, white men in those systems. They're completely ignoring that. And also, even if they tried to get it, or let's say they, you know, got the position, maybe tenure didn't work out because all the other brass guys were like, eh, we don't really want a girl here. You know, and we know that has happened. So it's not even a joke anymore. It's just the truth. Sometimes they just don't want to have that, like, a different dynamic within the section. And that is another reason why there's so many new policies and things that have been put into place, why the League of American Orchestras, the governing body, is so important to what's going on, while there's all this legal practices and systems in place now. So him saying they're just not nearly as many, you're right, they're not nearly as many women and probably people of color who are performing on trumpet now, but that is because there's still so much that needs to be done in order for that gap that there is to be filled. And mm-hmm. he should have, instead of trying to just be like, it's like, I don't have any responsibility for, like, the fact that there are not a lot of women who can be principal trumpets or be in a U.S. symphony, he should have been saying, let's all together share the resources and ways in which we change this. That is what he should have focused on. And instead, he just was trying to be like, there's nothing I can do. There's just more of them, more of us than there are of them. And, like, blah, 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 and all this. It's ignorant. You're trying to absolve yourself, and it's irresponsible to be someone of that platform who is not trying to push the conversation forward, but it's just, it felt like he was just trying to be like, I've said my piece, I'm walking away from it, which there's nothing heroic about that whatsoever. Honestly, I lose respect for those kinds of statements because you can see right through what their intention was, which was just to feel like they're just absolving themselves. Now,
the cornball.
You just sound corny. Like, no one really asked for that. You could have just shut up. Like, right. You could have just, like, not said anything.
Keep it in your head.
Keep it in your head.
But also, keep it out your head. Because, first of all, I don't know why you thinking, like, your stuff that come out of you ain't stanky, because yours is stanky just like everybody else. How about that? Okay. Because
where are you going with this?
Think about it. I had to think about it. That when I heard that, that's to me what I felt like. He was just trying to say, like, well, I happen to be so good that, you know, made it and everybody else does actually suck. It's just that there's some that just don't suck less. Like, and what are
Who
you?
was it? Who said it? I'll bleep it out. Don't worry.
Lauren, I love you, but baby, your edits haven't worked before. Remember that little we were raising money for our
Hey,
GBA?
and we still got there, and we
Yeah.
still got there, we
Oh,
still got there.
everybody say hello to the boo bear.
Hi, Bobby Boy.
Ah, Jaeger.
I just it's it, I will tell y'all, but no, real quick, Lauren, I'm gonna lead you, I'm gonna pitch it back to you real quick. I just did a riff quick search, not a comprehensive search, so please don't come for me, of like 10, 12 different orchestras. The two that I know have for sure have American conductors is Jonathan Hayward at Baltimore. So I was right, it was Baltimore.
He was born here, but
Correct.
we gotta talk
And
about
then
everything.
this is a good this is a friend of the pod, Kedrick Armstrong. Kedrick. Kedrick Armstrong. But I'm just saying, like, I did a quick search of like, let's say top like Ixom and then some Ropa. And like the vast majority are not. And I'm not saying like they have to be. Again, I want to put that out there. I am not saying they have to be. I just think, and again, this is like a thing off the top of my head, that within this purely Eurocentric, like this Eurocentric art form, like I believe that we can help classical music within this country and within the programming and within representation for what we are as a country and what we can be and what we see could might push be pushed forward through different lenses. So yeah, I'm not putting out there like we oh absolutely know whatever, because at the end of the day, the reason why most of these people are being hired and high level music directors is because they've been around the art form for much longer. Like you think of like the rural part of Mississippi. You think about the rural part of Georgia. I mean, there's the Albany Symphony, but they have like three concerts a year. Like, just think about like in the South or even in the Midwest, like your most rural part. They don't have a major orchestra. And they don't even have a youth orchestra sometimes. And so, like, or think about where, like, Lauren, you traveled to, or some people that you knew traveled to Atlanta to do youth orchestra stuff. And there was an Augusta one. There were some Macon people that traveled all the way to Atlanta to do that stuff. One of my friends who was in our Macon Youth Symphony, who was also in Atlanta, is now the bass clarinetist of the New York Phil. Like, those things do happen, y'all. It's like you, the people you will be with, youth orchestra, youth orchestra will be in major orchestras. But I just think at times when you don't see yourself and you see these people and they're like, wait, why do they keep getting these jobs? It's because they've been exposed and been around the music long. True.
American conductors, we want more American conductors. If you are American and you are wanting to study conducting, keep
Please.
doing it. We want you there. We want to see someone who is from here who has the values and the ideals of like what and knows what America like is and like understands the diversity of America and like how even like different states seem like different countries depending on where you are. It is a huge area. Like, I mean, Texas and California, the difference of like the values and like the even the maybe the diversity, the population who lives there can be so very different. So having someone who really understands that America is a melting pot of different ideals and values and people and cultures and history and who has a lived experience of that. 'Cause like it's like the same as like if any of us were to go try to work and live in a different country, we would have to take the time to learn about that country and their values, their morals, their history, their perspectives in order to be knowledgeable in some way. Now you can be ignorant, and a lot of the European conductors who've come over haven't had to shift to do anything. They can stay exactly how they are, and that is why we continue to be back.
Well,
That is
some of
why
them
we
don't live
continue.
here still.
That's what I was just thinking in my head. I was like, here, my thing is that we allow people to just live in ignorance and be comfortable. If you get a man or woman or whomever from Czechoslovakia, then that Czechoslovakian needs to know, baby, there are black people, there's Hispanic yes. people, there's Indian people, there's all these people that come to our concert that need to be seen, to be heard, to be all the things. And I'm sick of this, as Michael said, Eurocentric. And Prague and all this, like, that's cute and all, but that's not only the stuff, okay? Yes. And I think for the people that are in these orchestras, I know y'all scared of the conductors. I know that's what y'all is. Y'all ain't gotta tell me. I know you is. I know you is. Ooh. Y'all better stop being scared and speak up. Ooh. And this is coming from a conductor. And go up to them, and you, of course, respectfully, but say, look, hey, there's a large community that feels very unseen here.
Yes.
And I think if we were to do something, our audience will be better. Our engagement will be better. Our donations will be better. Also, the talent that we will eventually get will be better. Wow, those are all the four things that for now hundreds of years of orchestra have always been on the docket of why is our audience getting smaller, why is our engagement being smaller, why we're not getting a good pool of people.
Right.
Well, you can all solve that very quickly. Yeah. Hands watch, boom. But now, no, you don't want to do it.
Right.
I'm gonna, you know, put my foot out there for my conductor. It's Chattanooga, Ilya Rom. Mm. Love him. Because this is what he does. When he comes in for our concerts, he doesn't stay for just the 3 days. He stays for multiple weeks at a time, and he is in the community every single day. Like, he hosts like chats with the community at random coffee shops. He works with local artists. Like, he does all this stuff. And I like when that happens and the conductor tries to immerse himself in the community, that's when I have extreme faith. Mm-hmm. Again, because again, Ilya like has been around this music, and he's exposed me to so much orchestral music. Cause I tell him every time, I don't like this music. I don't like orchestral music. It's boring. It's not boring. And he's always like, oh, look at this, look at this, look at this. And it's like been cool because some of it, I'm like, okay, Vernberg or whatever his name is, Weinberg, whatever his name is. I'm like, I kind of like this. I don't like one, two, and three. I like the fourth movement. Let's skip everything else. Let's go straight to the fourth movement. But like, he has cemented himself in the community. Mm-hmm. Of course, to the donors, of course, but also to the community, and open himself up to everybody. Like, if you want to come and be like, hey, I didn't like your program, he'd be like, what's up? Let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I like when conductors do that, I love it. When a conductor flies in on a Monday and flies out on the Monday after, and you're an exam orchestra conductor, hey, and this girl, let me get on my little high horse real quick. When did it become a thing to be the music director of multiple Ixam orchestras? Find one. Because this is the greed of society too. Mm. Find one, make it yours, be cemented in the like community. Like, I know one, Lauren, right outside of Symphony Hall, ain't there a street named for Gerard Schwartz?
Yes.
That is how cemented this man was in that community. This man was in the community, and he was a trumpet player, fabulous trumpet player, one of the best to ever do it and solo wise. And he said, I'm gonna be an orc conductor. He didn't do Seattle, LA, Canada, somewhere. Like, he didn't do three at a time. This man said Seattle and stayed there.
Yeah.
Like, there is something to say about being there, because we all see these major orchestras. Like, tell me why. I was looking at a schedule, I'm like, how much is this music director getting paid? And they're conducting 20 weeks out of a 48 week symphony. Baby, you better come here on this paycheck.
I know, that's right.
I'm just I don't get it. Like, Spano was, he was up in Atlanta, girl. Everybody knows Spano. Him and his little glasses.
Bob. And, you know, the other thing that he did, I mean, I'm not in orchestra whatsoever. That was never my calling, my ministry. But Bob Spano would often be at KSU.
Yes.
He would.
And UGA.
And UGA. Like, he was at the major schools of Georgia. So, like, although I am not in orchestra. I still knew him because he was in our community as young musicians. So like, who knows if that could have ever changed somebody? I'm sure it has. I know he had like a conducting fellowships and stuff like that.
At Aspen.
Yeah, at Aspen and stuff like that. Those could have been many opportunities right there. So if you are listening, hold your and also not only just the conductors, but the admins as well, because they have some say into how they're going to do engagement and where they're going to do.
Say.
Exactly. So that's what you need to do as well if you're in it. And always with respect. We always say this with respect. I know sometimes our tones say, go in there and flip a table. Now, sometimes we need to flip some tables. But.
Oh, last table flip. These musicians that are getting paid Ixom Orchestra salaries that also ain't there half the time, baby, flip a table.
Flip it.
Yeah.
Like, baby, you telling me you can't. You telling me you're okay, like you're okay paying somebody over six figures and you're okay them not showing up? Baby, give me that job. I'll learn that instrument. Give me 2 years. I'll learn that instrument, baby. Davorak, I got you, girl. Oboe, baby, 2 years.
Money should be in the arts. We want money in the arts. The money should be dispersed more equitably and responsibly within the art. There are some crazy pay gaps that happen, especially for senior leadership of tier one symphonies to like certain like other admin, but also there's some pay stuff that happens with it for the orchestra as well between like concert masters and principal players.
And them concert masters, I went into the wrong instrument.
Girl, well, there's so many of them. But like we understand that there's knowledge you have to understand why these pay like gaps have happened in the first place. We know that especially for principal players of major US symphonies, they be popping over doing like recital appearances. They're preparing for multiple things. A lot of them teach at major universities and conservatories. So we know they have a very large portfolio. You also need to recognize that they're getting paid to do all of those things as well. So I still can't feel too bad if conversations begin to happen where it's like we need to re-level out this pay gaps that are happening in order for things to for us to keep the lights on. Because here's the thing, if no one's there to put your chairs out on the stage and to print your music for you or to market so people and have the website up on the site for people to even buy tickets, you can't play your fiddle. So we need to have a real conversation about like how we're going to survive, and everyone needs to come in and like put your egos at the door, like put your egos at the door. You have to be open. You have to be honest to hearing what other people are experiencing in order for us to move forward. So with that, my God, whew, we're back to school.
Find your ministries, girl.
Yes. All right, y'all. Find your ministries. We'll see y'all next week.
See you next week. Bye.